And we're back, and saddle up, get on your favorite steed. We are doing an Oscar sprint profile of the rider today from Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host, also Mike.
Also Mike here. I'm a little afraid of this episode because, Michael, you have weighed in on your, I don't know what the opposite of affinity is, disaffinity? I'm inventing a word.
Unfinity.
Your unfinity. War for horse movies.
Yes.
You
yes.
hate horse movies.
There's just too... The proportion of horse movie to people who want horse movie is so out of... It's like 1-to-1 right now. As opposed to like Marvel movie to people who want Marvel movie, it's like 1-to-1,000,000.
Well, I don't understand numbers, but I understand Isle of Dogs was a movie that just came out with Wes Anderson.
Yes.
If there was Isle of Horse, then you would be the evil mayor sending all the horse to Trash Island.
No, see, that's a misconception. I don't dislike horses.
You don't dislike the animal.
I dislike horse movies.
The genre.
Yes. The very specific niche genre of horse movie, but we're not getting away from it today. We were doing an Oscar sprint profile of The Rider. If you do not know what an Oscar sprint is, we take would be, should be, and will be Oscar contenders. We put them through our Oscar sprint profile format. Why is it an Oscar sprint? Because it's the end of the year and it's sprinting time for all these to get to their award ceremonies.
It's go time. And
that's right.
This movie won Best Picture at the Gotham Awards, best film that is. And we figured it reopened a window for us to review it. I saw it back in whenever it came out there.
Yeah, sometime over the spring there, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see it in theaters. I wanted to, but we were doing too many Marvel movies at the time.
And I probably protested.
You were, it was post Mike Horse Rant, and I think our first monthly preview episode, we did them bi-monthly there for a
something,
while.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And it was our first one, and you went on like a 10-minute rant against horse movies.
There's like a billion of them!
There's several or a billion, but again, I bet you
there's more horse movie than there are dog movie, and that's just
upsetting
not right.
To you.
That's not right.
We are dog.
Yeah, so before we dive in here to The Rider and what it has in store, Mike's going to fill you in a little bit about what we have planned for the holidays coming up in this final month of 2018.
Programming nugget. Michael Myers did not do a Christmas movie series.
Yet.
So we're not going to do an entire cohesive series, but we are going to hit on a couple of Christmas movies. We're very excited about this because some of them are childhood favorites of ours.
Yes.
And some of them are new favorites. And if Anna and the Apocalypse ever comes to town, we'll be able to hit on that as well. So we'll do some traditional favorites, some off the beat new favorites, some weird ones. The silly ones and the ones that we're going to take our Oscar film critic hats and approach with new eyes. It's going to be like rewatching these movies that we loved in our childhoods again with our old curmudgeon-y selves.
That's the hope. Anyway, we hope we can crack this
right.
veneer of anger.
Well, I'm trying to manage the audience, their expectations, because I don't want to just say, oh, we're going to do Miracle on 34th Street, and we're going to just be in hymnals the whole time, and Christmas carols this whole episode.
Well,
but no, we're going to be angry,
we'll be serious
grumpy.
About it. But if there's anything that can light our hearts, our miserable, cold, dead hearts,
okay,
it may be Christmas.
So
movies,
essentially,
but we'll
we need the Scrooge storyline to play out through
exactly.
each one of these episodes. So we're going to start off all grumpy and angry.
Yes.
And by the end, we're
going to be
buying...
grumpy and angry. Yeah, that's correct.
But buying people hams and turkeys and...
But eating them ourselves, yes. Yeah, we finish each other's sandwiches.
That was
here.
A snort. That was a snort or a nay. I don't know which.
So you can keep an eye out for that. We have this one coming up to end your weekend, however you want to listen to it. We have MMO Weekly that's going to kick off Monday again. As always, we'll remind you once again in our first movie on the Christmas side is going to be A Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Yes, exactly.
I've never seen it.
Okay.
Yeah,
went
which amazes me.
Treat, I think. If my 12-year-old self was talking to you now, then you're in for a treat. I used to love that movie.
Okay, good.
It was one of those, like, I got four younger brothers. They would just put it on all the time, and we would laugh and love it.
Good. I'm excited for it.
It was good.
Yeah,
but
I have no idea
if it holds up.
You don't
up.
Know.
Like,
you haven't seen it in a while.
No, I haven't seen it
all
since
right.
little kids were around.
All right. Fair enough. Well, How often are you around little kids?
None. I don't see any little kids anymore. I'm not an uncle yet. I'm not a father. So I have no idea.
All right. Good. So that's going to be first up. We'll do that sometime next week. That's going to kick off our Christmas rewatch,
I guess. My childhood
will
be ruined if it doesn't hold up, though.
I'm curious. I am very curious because I feel like if we did a Goonies rewatch, you'd have some things to say.
I just rewatched the Goonies. No, I have some good. I would have good things
to say. You still
like
it? Okay. All right. Good. All right. So let's see how this plays out. This is one of also Mike's childhood favorites. I've yet to experience it. We're going to see how it goes. I know a lot of you people out there like it. So Muppets Christmas Carol, that's next week on the immediate horizon. Mike's going to start us off the Oscar sprint profile of the writer as done by Mike and Oscar. And also Mike usually starts with cast and crew, but this time he's going production profile for us.
You're right. This time I'm going to start with story, inception, and production notes. There was an awesome Rolling Stone article because there's not a lot on Wikipedia or out there. You have to do a deep dive into some promotional interviews, Q&As from the festivals.
Sure.
And Rolling Stone and Variety and a few big magazines covered the making of this movie, and it's kind of hitting the internet now again after this movie won the Gotham Awards and the New York film critics like it, and maybe it's going to be something that gets a repush now for the Oscars.
Could be.
Rolling Stone article written by Amy Nicholson basically blew my freaking mind because I saw this movie months ago. I had no idea that all of these actors are actually non-actors.
Yeah.
They're real cowboys. They're real rodeo people. They're South Dakotans.
It's amazing.
And they have only ever acted in the other of Chloe Zhao's movies, some of them, where, again, she cast non-actors. So this writer-director, Chloe Zhao, she is a new rock star in the business. She's got the Eternals coming out eventually for Marvel.
Sure.
She's just been attached to that. But I was shocked to learn that a few years ago, when Brady was 19 or 20, he had been retired from rodeo cowboying. So Brady Jandreau is his name. I was essentially taming horses on set and bumped into Chloe Zhao, and like she just had magnetism to watching him tame these horses. And what she said throughout the promotional videos, Michael, was that I watched him manipulate the emotions of all these horses, and I figured maybe he can manipulate the emotions of all these audience members.
Ah, that's tricky. Well, I'll say right up front, I not that I know a damn thing about horse training, but you see him actually do that a couple times. Those are my best scenes. You see him actually do that a couple times
and
in this film, and it's just wild to watch.
He legitimately tamed horses
during
the movie, and you could tell that it took a long time because at the beginning of the scene, it's like bright sunlight. I mean, by the end of the scene, the sun is down. So it looked like they were at it for a long time. Another little nugget was that he was still working as a horse trainer and a horse tamer and a guy working with horses for his everyday. And Chloe Zhao basically had to work around his schedule to get him on set at night and later in the day. So he was working I guess horse is not a 9-to-5. It might be a 4 a.m. to whatever, 11 a.m. job.
There's the horse movie about that schedule.
Right. You know? The horses are probably on a different schedule. You probably got to work with the horses when the horses want to work with you. But bottom line is that this is a real rodeo cowboy. He really did get his skull caved in by a bucking bronco.
Amazing.
Had to go into a serious surgery to fix his skull, metal plate in his skull. Was in a coma for a while, got out of that coma, and in his real life, he was ordered not to ride horses for 6 months, not to go back to the rodeo ever, because another head injury of that size would have done him in. And basically, he had to, you know, stay away from horses. 2 weeks later, he was back on a horse.
Which is, again, pictured in this movie. And that's basically what this movie is all about. The not to give the plot away too early, but it's basically this moment in this kid's life and having to grapple with those decisions.
And that's the cool thing about this story. And it kind of blew my mind to read all these articles that all these rodeo cowboys are at, and in fact, rodeo cowboys. We watch them. We go to the rodeo in this movie. They're actually riding these bucking broncos. She's got the close-up. They got the camera right on them. And we have a series of characters who are actually who they are in real life in one form or another. We have Brady Jandreau's real father, Tim, his real sister, Lily. She really does have Asperger's. In real life, his mom is still alive, and his mom just played a cameo in this movie. His mom is not in this movie, so they did, you know, take artistic license with a bunch of stuff. In real life, he got married. He didn't get married in this movie.
Okay.
He's without a romantic interest in this movie. But Chloe Zhao had some cool quotes throughout the promotional videos, and this was in that article from Rolling Stone by Amy Nicholson, and the quote is, "If I was going to tell them I was making a documentary, I think it might have been a little bit harder to get people on board," admits Zhao. Zhao then said, "There's a healing process in art to ask these young people to play out some of their intimate personal struggles. Sometimes it's even more true than if you were just going to point and shoot." So I thought that was
sure, but that also puts a hell of a lot of pressure on these non-actors to convey that emotion.
True, and I think there were some low points in that. We're going to get into it, but for the most part, there's a lot of good acting in this movie. I was surprised.
It's surprisingly good, yeah.
Honestly, I was surprised to learn that the whole cast was non-actors. I kind of knew, reading about this movie after I saw it a few months back, that Brady was a real rodeo guy, and you see him really taming horses, and you see him teaching other kids, other boys how to rodeo, other cowboys.
Yeah, but there's times he's got to play that solemn and restrained anger and rage and resentment. And he does that pretty well. Maybe it comes from a place of reality, too.
I had no idea he was a non-actor, period.
Yeah, same
I thought
here.
Like he was just some, like what he was doing. And then after it, I learned he was a non-actor. And then after, and months later, when we found the second window to review this, I learned they're all non-actors, and my mind was blown. Last production nugget here. The shoot went for about a month in September to October of 2016. It was all shot in South Dakota. So cast and crew, like I said, written and directed by Chloe Zhao. She made Songs My Brothers Taught Me in 2015, which was about an Indian reservation in the Dakotas there. Both films have been hits at Cannes and many other film festivals. She won the Bonnie Award at last year's Independent Spirits, which put her on, and this movie, on my radar, to be honest.
Okay.
Brady Jandreau plays Brady Blackburn, his real father Tim, his real sister Lily, like I said, playing Wayne and Lily. Blackburn's Cat Clifford plays Cat Clifford. Taner Lando plays Tanner Lando. James Calhoun plays James Calhoun, and Lane Scott plays Lane Scott. And that's why, like, I should have noticed that in the credits after my first viewing. I just never did. All these real people play themselves.
That the Lane Scott character is a fascinating look too, because if that's actual footage of him at the end.
It is.
What it was. That's amazing.
It is. So that, unfortunately, he did get hurt the way he got hurt. He got hurt in a different way. I'll have nuggets on it and spoilers, but he is Brady's best friend in this movie. He's Brady's real-life best friend since they were kids. The families, this is what I learned about rodeo cowboys. Basically, they are, you know, like put on horses when they're very young, little baby horses, and they're like ridden around a little bit to get them used to it. Then when they're like 3 or 4, they let the kids just ride sheep. They put the kids are like on, Tyco.
That's crazy.
No Tyco, no bicycles,
yeah,
no whatever.
No training wheels on sheep.
No training wheels for sheep, correct. So they just put the kids on sheep, and they're riding around the ranches there, just bucking like bucking Bronco sheep.
That's amazing. That really crazy? Is amazing.
Mike, you got some specs here?
Yeah, let's do some specs for The Rider. Mike already told you some of these. Written and directed by Chloe Zhao, who only had one previous feature film to her CV, 2015 song My Brother Taught Me, but made enough of an impact, as Mike said, on the independent circuit in recent years that she's tabbed for the upcoming Marvel movie, The Eternals, which Marvel studio head Kevin Feige describes as a movie about ancient aliens and how they shaped Earth. That's kind of mysterious, I think. There's not really a name attached to that as far as who the hero will be, but it's Chloe. Is that his movie now?
Rodeo Cowboys.
Yes, they lasso Earth. It made its debut May 20th of 2017 in Cannes, or Cannes as we like to call it, but didn't make it stateside until April 13th of this year in the U.S. 105-minute runtime and an R rating. It was produced by Mauvais Asher, Sacha Ben Harosh, and Chloe Zhao herself. Music was done by Nathan Halpern. Cinematography, Joshua James Richards. Caviar and Highway Films are the attached production companies in the indie arm of Sony. Sony Picture Classics gets the distribution rights. So we're dealing with a group of pretty much relative unknowns for the most part between cast and crew.
True indie here.
Who made a film which had its rights bought by Sony for release and caught the attention of Marvel. So it's probably not going to surprise you to hear that the critic scores for this one are pretty high. 7.5 IMDb score and 7,500 reviews. 97% certified fresh Rotten Tomato score and 151 critical reviews. 145 of those being positive. Average critical score 8.4 out of 10. That is high. 82% audience score and 1,400 reviews, average of 4.4 5.2 out of 5 for the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. And arguably most impressive of all is the 92 Metascore from 42 critical reviews, which include a whopping 13 perfect scores of 100 and a low score of a still respectable 63, which happens to also be the only score of the 42 that's less than a 75. Wow. That's high. Very highly regarded.
It's universally liked.
Yeah, at least an above average film, to say the least. Box Office Mojo says it's still playing in more than 20 theaters and has been in at least one theater every week since its U.S. release back in April.
Oh, cool.
But it hasn't made money, obviously. There's no listed budget for the film, and the film's only brought in $2.4 million total in its theatrical run. But
domestically, I saw a million foreign.
Yeah, okay. So we'll talk about maybe 3.5 total. We're doing an OSP because it's been a surprise winner of some serious awards thus far in award season. It has a bunch of nominees and awards, but the most impressive thus far are its two most recent wins. The National Board of Review tabbed it as one of the top 10 indie films of the year, and as we said at the top of this, it won the Best Feature Gotham Independent Film Awards at the Gotham Film Festival just this past week, upsetting better known films such as The Favourite, If Beale Street Could Talk, and First Reformed, as well as Madeline's Madeline, was also in that category. Even though it's actually The Favorite, whose Metascore is the highest of that group, with a 93 to the writer's 92.
Wow.
That's what we have here. Yeah, big upset, right? You couldn't, gun to your head, there's no way you were picking the writer.
Correct, and you were upset about it because you're rooting for The Favorite to take down A Star Is Born.
I need The Favorite to do well at the Academy.
If Beale Street Could Talk, you need one of those to get more
momentum.
Buzz.
Yeah.
They got great numbers. It's just, no, when it came down to an award show, it did not get picked.
No, it didn't get it done.
I do wonder if the Gothams basically wanted to be that trendy pick here.
I think about that as well.
We're going to talk about it in MMO Weekly. I'll do some more of a breakdown for you guys, do my research,
nice
and see what they've picked so far for the their recent winners. But I think they wanted to stand out, the Gothamers did.
Wanted to give it some sort of recognition.
They did that.
Look, if this one makes it all the way to the Oscars, we're going to have an Oscar lens at the end of the non-spoiler section, but it's going to be for Best Picture if it gets anywhere, so we'll see.
Plot premise, Mike, is after suffering a near-fatal head injury, a young cowboy undertakes a search for a new identity and what it means to be a man in the heartland of America.
Yep. So that's pretty accurate.
That's pretty accurate. It's a good premise, and it does play out. So what were your expectations going into this? I kind of talked about mine a little bit here.
Yeah, so we talked about this a little before we hit record today, too, and that you had watched this a couple times before I got to it, as is usually the case, and you filled me in that, hey, it's amazing. None of these guys are traditional actors. They're all traditionally not actors. So I knew that going in, and I think that might have affected how my first viewing went and how I have digested this film as opposed to how you did, because I think I'm a little harsher on it, and I'm a little more questioning as to how this could be an award winner compared to such vaunted
You saw it after everybody loved it.
Yes.
And everybody proclaimed it as a dark horse best picture candidate and everybody. And I saw it kind of when the independent spirits were mentioning it. And I saw it months ago and I didn't know about the production backstory, which just tickled my fancy. And we do talk about fancies on the podcast often. That's a phrase I should take out of my vocabulary, but I have not yet done so. But anyway, Michael, it was on my radar. I watched it on VOD for $6 on my laptop twice in as many nights back when we just couldn't squeeze it into the schedule at the time. I remember being upset about that, kind of upset at myself.
And I wasn't. Yes.
But I do think that now it's better that we're reviewing it now because we can stack it up against all these other Oscar movies.
Yeah, I agree. And that it would have been basically, it still is conjecture and projection on our part, but at least now you have some serious momentum behind it from the award. It beat out. I mean, that category, say what you want about Madeline's Madeline being in there, but that has at least three legitimate possible Best Picture contenders, nominees that it just beat out. So there is some momentum definitely behind this program right now. Did I think it was, I may have been too high going in, I think was the point you're making. I think you're right. I may have been expecting a little bit too much.
And vice versa. I may have been too low going in and it just pleasantly surprised the horse-loving shit out of me.
Right.
So let's go into production values, though. Cinematography. I thought this was what stole the show. This was extraordinary. The landscape of the Badlands, Michael, sure helps.
This is what I think helps it stick out so much is the cinematography, because you have And it's a story. It's a narrative mm-hmm. with the whole production, because you have all these unknowns, non-actors, non-traditional people in front of a camera, and you're setting it up. You're telling a story that, like I said to you, I don't think is all that uncommon when you strip it down into bare bones of it.
Right.
But it's done and presented in such this beautifully professional way mm-hmm. that you would think it was with any major studio that had behind it. So yeah, I think the cinematography helps it out infinitely exactly. with how it looks.
You think about the tiny but minuscule budget right. they must have had, and for her to put this on screen.
It is gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. Every shot of the planes, every shot. Think about all the money behind the Ballad of Buster mm-hmm. Scruggs, right? And how good that looked.
Right.
And it's good no money behind this one, and we get some of these shots that's just like, oh my God, I think that should be on the playbook for indie filmmakers out there. Like, if you're going to be Quentin Tarantino and you are going to just, you know, control and manipulate audiences with your script, and basically that's going to be the star of your show and the editing and your hold on it as a director, and I'm going to get kooky and weird and innovative, then, okay, you can have two people at a diner across from each other talking.
Right.
You can have just Marcellus Wallace and Bruce Willis. You can have them talking.
Right.
Right. But you can have whatever the hell happened in Reservoir Dogs happen in a warehouse, and that's that. But if you are going to be a more traditional storyteller,
this
in
is
the
a good
sense
point, yeah.
that your pacing is going to be more traditional, and she breaks tradition at times, but at the same way she's able to basically sell all of the studios, look, I can make chicken salad out of chicken.
There you go.
I can take this amount of money and give you a award-worthy cinematography. And
yeah,
that's what
right.
she does here.
And it is absolutely gorgeous. And again, I wonder, since it was on location, it is the actual plains of South Dakota. It's not done on a soundstage. Like, how much work are you doing if you're shooting a South Dakota sunrise with a cowboy riding a white horse?
Leave no trace. Really go into the Oregon
right.
woods.
There is a lot of payoff.
We've
to
seen
it.
This a lot, like with indie films. And the ones that really strike us are the ones that go into nature. So
right.
that should be on your playbook, indie filmmakers. If you're not going to be Tarantino or somebody that's really going to be innovative and weird and whatever, go into nature.
But only if you're not going to be Tarantino. If you are going to be Tarantino, you can do whatever you want.
Production design, costume design, again, very authentic. This choice of setting, this choice to record and document makes sense.
How much
makes
do you
sense.
Think was done with the costume design in this?
They probably just said, okay, cast, show up.
Right, exactly. That's how I think, too.
I did, but it looks great. It
looks
does
authentic. Look great. No, no argument. You look like you're at a rodeo, because you are at a rodeo. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Could you think
right.
about the sets and like, all right, we're going to go behind this trailer, and there's going to be a horse chained to a fence, and there's going to be a transmission on the ground, and there's going to be, you know, all those little choices make sense. And her decision to go to the horse auction and her decision to go to the pawn shop, which is unlike any pawn shop you and I will ever go into, because it's just selling horse saddles and all that stuff. And then there's like tattoo parlors that are just at your friend's house, and you know, you're wrestling in the living room, and it's wild how we get to experience South Dakota lifestyle and all the different levels of it. You know, and then you get thrown into a grocery store, and that's why the grocery store is so foreign.
Yeah,
right.
And
to
it
us
feels like
and
such
to
a,
him.
Right, and it feels like such a departure. And I think you're hitting on something important too. It's that you really are, credit to Chloe Zhao, unbelievably, because she really does do a great job of integrating. Whether or not she was responsible for the costume, the set, or whatever, you know, yes, maybe she all had that at her disposal anyway. She mm-hmm. didn't have to work hard for those. But you're right in that it was her job to differentiate our perception of what quote unquote regular life is versus yep. what other people may experience. And it says that whole job of how, you know, we're all just humans living on this earth, but we all experience things very, very differently. And what's normal to one person may not seem so to another. I totally
talk
agree.
Talk about, you know, not normal to you and I. Like, they're up close and personal at these rodeo events, which is something we've never seen. We've never seen
no.
a horse bucking bronco freaking out
no.
while it's still in its cage, and the camera and Brady are like 2 feet away.
That's a great point.
That's crazy, and that was really authentic, of course, because there's no way you can control a horse like that. Like, the horses were not actors either, Michael, and that was something to have.
Beautiful animals too. God, oh, yeah. They look great.
And every scene with a horse in this movie is like my favorite, I'm sorry to say, because all the horse scenes were phenomenal. phenomenal. We have.
I really did my best to put my bias aside when I was watching this. I really tried.
And we have great horse scenes. Every rodeo scene is terrific. But I will say something to audience members who have not seen this or are listening to our non-spoiler review. I think it's very important to understand this is not a rodeo sports movie in a sense. This is a heavy drama. It's more about this guy recovering from the injury. It's not a rodeo sports fleece.
It's also not a sports injury movie. Like, the impact event, the event that actually caused this injury is shown once on a small screen and it's on a phone.
And it looked like it's the real, I don't know for sure, but it looks like it's Brady's real injury.
It may be. I don't know either. But the point is that this isn't about like a rodeo cowboy needing to get back in the ring or, you know, an old fighter that doesn't know another. Like, it's about a guy trying to find his way through life. Right. It's a coming of age story where he's pretty much handicapped or disabled from living what he thinks is normal.
Yeah, it's closer to the wrestler, right?
Yeah, right. That's a good comparison.
Than it is to what was a give me a wrestling movie. Is there any good wrestling movie?
Santa's sleigh. Okay, where Goldberg is Santa killing people.
Okay, so there's no good wrestling movies. But it's
why do you think the wrestler was such a big deal?
But what we're saying.
Holy shit!
It's not Concussion. It is not Remember the Titans. It's somewhere in between.
Yes. Okay. It's a personal drama as opposed to a sports industry thing.
Now the music, Mike, I watched this four times now in total, and I watched it twice recently. The orchestral score was not something I noticed that much. I remember writing down a little something, oh, this music is terrific, it's nice, it fits, it works. I'm not going to say much about it, but there it is. I re-listened to the score on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I'm amazed by the size and scope of it. Like, she got a full orchestra to play all the score of this movie. And all I don't know shit about orchestras or classical music, but it seems to me like all the instruments are involved. All of them.
All of them.
Yeah. Maybe not all the walk hard instruments.
What about the didgeridoo? Dewey
Cox. The didgeridoo may not be involved, but the rest of them.
I did notice the score on the first viewing, and I thought it was beautiful. I also think this is more, and by the way, we are musical critics at this point. We've done enough.
We have 14 podcasts about music.
All right.
12 about Oscar music, yeah. 2 about Queen music.
And we talk about score. We talk about music every OSP. So my comment on it would be that this movie is more impactful in the scenes it decides to go silent. Sure. I think that's what I picked up most from it, is that it is a very beautiful score, and it does do well to build the drama, but also the big moments of impact when you're getting the glances, as you always have in every drama, the hard stares, whether it's between man and man or man and woman or horse and man, it's silent, and it's letting you just read the emotion and the looks on someone's face, obviously not the horse's face. But
when there's a horse that turns its head around to look at its master, I am like almost, my heart is broken.
Right.
It's torn asunder.
I think it's important to notice that. And a lot of those scenes are done in silence. And I think that's the important part. So I don't know if that part is done intentionally, whether she stripped the score away for those moments intentionally. But if it makes for a very haunting image in your mind.
Yeah, we've mentioned the performances a bunch here that are non-actors. Some of these scenes are unforgivably bad, I will say. There's like two of them for me. But
so there's performances in this that aren't great. I for them all being non-actors, the performances are well above expectations. But you're right in that I think there's a couple scenes where the poor acting or the lack of experience catches up with them in the scenes. So in that aspect, I agree. There's some scenes that don't hold up.
Now, you can say that, I think upon rewatch, you can say they're getting away with it a little bit because they're stoic. And that's fine. And you have a lot of stoic cowboys in this movie. Mm-hmm. But even stoic cowboys should blink. And
that sounds like the name of a country song.
Every once in a while, your eyes have to close.
I didn't say you should write it.
But yeah, there's one character in particular, his like main rodeo guy friend.
Yeah.
Is he doesn't blink, and that is a hallmark for non-actors. I've worked with him a bunch on my like little indie films back in the day.
He's staring hard.
And they stare hard, and because they're focused. They're focused on getting things right, and when you're focused, you're staring, and it's you're not lived in the scene, and the mark of
a great actor. Look how much I'm not looking at the camera. Look how hard I'm not paying attention to the camera.
Whereas smell the fart acting is the next level of that. Joey Tribbiani will almost force himself to blink and look upwards, right?
I mean,
to feel more, you know, natural. And unfortunately, there's a scene around a campfire that is just unforgivable in my mind. And then you mentioned a couple.
Yeah, I got like two or three that I can point. They're probably my worst scenes. But again, I think the important lesson is that for a group of non-actors,
right,
much more, you're going to be impressed more so than you are disappointed.
Now, that being said, the father is terrific, I thought.
I am shocked.
That's his real dad?
Yes, that he was willing to tell his story that way.
He has a negative, his character does a lot of stupid things.
He does one redeemable big payoff.
Right, I don't know if that's his real story or not. I remember Brady talking about how he was such a handful after his surgery.
It's the same name, right?
No, he's Wayne Blackburn instead of Tim. He's not playing himself.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the same name. My fault.
I think they kind of wrote in some fantasy drama there with the family dynamic because
I would hope.
In real life, he has a wife. In real life, his mother's still alive. It's a signal to me that they dramatized the family life a little bit. The father is also doing a great job, and this is a testament to the script as well. Like, all the scenes where he's breaking his son's balls, he's still, like, telling his son that he loves him. He's like, give me a hug before he breaks his son's balls. And
there's love there, and there's certainly people that don't know how to use their emotions that are very restricted emotionally and don't know how to confess themselves or convey their what they're thinking. And I thought that was that may have come too naturally to that family because it seemed like they were very good at playing that restrained.
But I thought Brady Jandreau as Brady Blackburn, he is extraordinary. I was
very impressed.
I'm impressed with him just as an actor. Yes, he does the scenes where he is stoic. Like they almost speak like Native Americans do. And
I got that too.
Native
yeah.
Americans. And it makes sense if you're close to an Indian reservation because this is where I shot my last film about an Indian reservation. So, and there's a lot of, you know, Native American characters. There's a lot of Native American characters in this movie,
right.
and that's, they have a very deliberate way of speaking where the tone of their voice doesn't necessarily dip down low at the end of a sentence.
No, they're monotone and articulate.
Yeah, and they're very articulate, they're very clear, and the clarity in what they say is awesome to watch, awesome to listen to, of course, but at the same time, it's very direct, and you could fall into one screenwriting hole after another by being on the nose dialogue. We don't get that here to transition into the script.
There is, this is where I think his sister actually having a disability played into this part of the script well, because there's one point where he, I thought, was very on the nose, but he's doing it, he's explaining the plot to his obviously disabled or mentally handicapped sister, where he would need to do that, whether this is a camera or not.
And her reaction is telling, but also the way he describes it means a lot. It's loaded.
Right.
Basically, he's telling the audience where he fixates he's at, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, where he thinks he's at, and he's not where he should be at. We're all saying, like, no, Brady, no. No, you should not be thinking, you're overestimating your scenario right now, but... I just thought he was terrific.
He's far and away, and it's a great thing for this movie too, because he's in it, I would say, for the 100 and whatever minutes. He's on screen like 94 minutes. I
mean, he can act. He can act in movies, period.
So
his dad, he got the talent from his dad, it seems like, because his dad's great.
Yeah, I would say you're going to be very impressed. Going in knowing these are non-actors, you will be far more impressed than you are taken out of the movie at any moment.
In terms of some script thoughts here, Michael, I thought the script really shines. It's not as traditional as we'd think, and in terms of like hitting all the typical beats, it does it in subtler ways. It does it in different ways.
Doesn't
like
rely on tropes.
Movements. Yeah, it's really fun to take this story in because there's a lot of cowboy archetypes in play that have been modernized to quote unquote. Where have all the cowboys gone? I've sang this before.
You've sang it,
yeah. And they've gone to South Dakota.
I don't think on microphone, but yes.
They've gone to
South Dakota. That was just for me.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Where the podcast ends and real life begins, I don't know anymore. But there's a lot of like, cowboy up and grit your teeth and those sayings.
And that's what I think makes it the story of this redemption or this am I a man? Can I have a fulfilled life? It makes it so relatable because the cowboy up, grit your teeth, rub some dirt on it. That's... I have this in the spoiler section, but this is as much a story about Brady finding his way as it is a condemnation of toxic masculinity.
Right.
Like this whole rub some dirt on it, walk it off, don't show weakness, you can't show emotion. Mm-hmm. This is all this kid's downfall in this movie. And yeah. this is what he needs to overcome.
So it's a coming of age,
it's totally relatable.
Becoming a man movie.
Yep.
And it's basically the conflict is the old school perception of what a man is versus, you know, what we all hope the new school perception is. And I just love the way they modernized the quote unquote cowboy epic archetype, and they threw these throwback rodeo boys in there. These are throwback characters that are going to go with a bottle of booze, go out and ride a course in the twilight, and go, you know, sing around a campfire, and they're still doing that.
Yeah, aside from the cinematography, the most impressive thing to me, I think, about this is that it's a movie about a cowboy family who works, makes their living at the rodeo, lives in the plains of the Old West. And it's not a Western.
Right.
This isn't a Western movie at all.
No, it's a coming-of-age movie. Yeah. It's a becoming-a-man movie. Yeah, I totally agree. A quick Oscar lens here, Mike, before we finish up non-spoilers. Best Picture. It's in the possibilities category on Feinberg, which puts it in, like, his top 20. It's all the way down 41st on award circuit. Only one expert has it on Gold Derby. We've seen crazier things happen. I would say, like nobody had Phantom Thread really last year until the after
right.
it came out,
I
after
think,
it really got nominated.
I think when people stop taking account of what happens in award season or actually start tallying up is usually Critics' Choice time.
Mm-hmm.
That's when people will start looking back and say, well, you know, this one at Gotham or this one at the New York Film Festival. You know,
yeah.
I think that's when people are going to start taking into account what happened with these movies in totality. So I wouldn't expect this upsetting at Gotham to have an impact now. Expect it to be turn of the new year, I think. People will look back and say this
one. Yeah, the Bonnie Award winner, Chloe Zhao, at the Independent Spirits last year. It must have somehow squeaked into the time frame for that award show with it being up for Best Feature and then with her winning the Bonnie Award there, Best Female Filmmaker. So I also think she should get some more momentum here, being picked up by Marvel, being up for all these awards. And I don't see any Best Director buzz for her. I could totally... Like, if you think about degree of difficulty. Number one.
You're preaching to the choir.
Minuscule budget, Michael. And putting Oscar-worthy cinematography. I'm going to talk about that in a second. Oscar-worthy cinematography
yep.
up there with a minuscule budget. With all non-actors. Are you kidding me? She is not up for Best Director, at least in people's top 20s. What are they doing?
And the anger for me for that comes from Mudbound was so revered last year.
Right.
For essentially the same type of thing. Not the same content of the movie or the story.
Oscar.
But the same
cinematography with a lot of strong production values.
So what is this missing that one was so revered and so hopeful had? I don't understand. Other than the Jennifer Morrison thing. But
other than Netflix, maybe. You
know, maybe yeah. But I'm you're preaching
campaign.
To the choir as far as I'm concerned. I think Chloe Zhao is a phenomenal job all around.
Bottom line, maybe this is just not getting campaign four and the critics notice
Sony
that.
Sony Picture Classics is a low budget traditionally thing. Maybe they don't have a lot of money to get the marketing machine behind them. Then again, it is owned by Sony, so who knows?
Now, Brady Jandro as Best Actor, I wonder if, you know, we all think he's great as a debut, but is he great in terms of the best actors of the year?
Best Actors loaded.
So cinematography is where it has its best chance, Michael. It is a front runner on Feinberg forecast as of this
moment. It should be.
Top five.
Yeah. I mean, why would...
Nominated.
Like, can you name five that are definitely head and shoulders you would put in before this?
No.
Maybe two now? Like,
so two experts on Gold Derby have it there, which surprises me.
Gold Derby's done some weird things lately. I don't know if Gold Derby's totally up to date with as far as all their leading experts are with watch and everything, because they've had some weird rankings the last couple weeks with us.
Yeah, you're weirded out by Gold Derby.
They're
only the 20 most powerful pundits in our business, but that's fine. But
I got some questions for some people there.
Come on the show and talk about it with us. Bottom line, this movie seems like production values. I wonder if it continues to pick up these precursor awards, like winning these awards, if it'll finally get on people's radars.
Yeah, it seems like a simple thing to say. The more awards it wins, the more notoriety it will gain.
Yeah.
But again, once you get towards the end of the year and people look back and start tabulating in total what all these pictures did at all these different festivals and critic circles, I think if there's enough of a collection here, if it keeps surprising and if it can keep upsetting in the same category as these big names, if it does in other areas, to other award shows too, we could see this one slip through the cracks and get that maybe that 10th best picture slot or that 5th best director. God, if she breaks through with best director in this year, that'll be very impressive.
Yeah, it doesn't look. It doesn't seem like doesn't it, unfortunately. Seem like it. Doesn't but, seem like it. I'm glad we were able to review this movie, though, because I've enjoyed this watch several times. It's on Stars right now, so you have no excuse.
Yeah, that's how I saw it, yeah.
No excuse Stars not to watch
VOD
it.
VOD right now. This was out. The least painful horse movie that I have sat through. I think I only lost an arm, maybe a couple toes, but out of anger. Yes. But no, it's a decent watch. I think it's a watch for both of us, but you're going to make the point, and like you said
your
previously.
Your metaphors are extreme.
Did a lot of house that Jack built lately. The point you were making before, how it's not a happy-go-lucky, let's go to the movies right. type movie.
It's an Oscar movie. It's a slow drama. It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night movie. It's a movie you got to bring some patience into it.
So. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. But I think otherwise, it's a watch for both of us, and we can dance if we want to. Spoilers ahead.
This is. A spoiler warning.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
This is the spoiler section for the movie The Rider, the Oscar Sprint profile brought to you by Mike, and Oscar. If you have not seen The Rider, this is a good place for you to hit pause, go see the movie, come back. We'll be waiting for you when you get back here. If you have seen the movie, if you are interested in hearing what we say about the twists and turns, or if we did such a great job of building up your anticipation that you just cannot possibly go another minute without hearing the spoilers for this movie of The Rider, then this is where you want to be. It is all spoilers all the time. This Oscar Sprint profile brought to you by Mike, and Oscar, covering Chloe Zhao's The Rider for the Oscars of 2018-19. And Mike, we usually start with some carryovers, and we got one this time.
So yeah, the one carryover is a real life epilogue for where Brady Gendreau is at now. He's 22 years old. Thanks to this movie, he can claim to do a lot of living in the last few years because he's traveled the world. He's been to Paris. He's been all around on the film festival circuit with Chloe Zhao. But more importantly, like, I guess he took the money he made here and from his horse taming business, and he bought a breeding business, Gendreau Performance Horses.
Yeah,
it's a fascinating scenario. So he's living the horse trainer lifestyle. And so he doesn't have the sad epilogue that he does in this movie necessarily. The second he woke up from his coma after his real injury, he proposed to his now wife, who's in a cameo in the movie.
Oh, wow.
I think it was the girl giving him the weed. I don't know.
Good for him.
I don't know who his actual wife. That's looked nice to hear. Online. I couldn't find that. He has a kid, Tawny Bay. Bought her a stuffed pony 10 days before the Rolling Stone article was published. He also taught Chloe Zhao to ride. The quote is, "On Pine Ridge, there's a joke that I'm the Lakota girl," Chloe Zhao said. "The Lakota girl with a weird last name," she laughs. "Chinese girl in braids, constantly being mistaken for Native American until, of course, she opens her mouth." That was a little joke that she made throughout the promotional videos. See, people from different parts of the world have different kind of accents, I guess. She's very literal in her jokes. Like,
go
before
on.
She said that we're all, like, manipulated emotionally by Brady Gendreau, like horses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or manipulated right. by him as a horse trainer. But what does that say about us as audience members? I agree with her.
We're sheep.
We are.
We're just lemmings.
We're instinctual animals, yeah. And our emotions can be manipulated by a guy who gives us certain kind of looks.
Yeah.
The same way a horse can.
Agree.
Okay, so she's right. So yeah, I didn't have to get it before. Right? I forgot totally it. I forgot it. All right, Brady Blackburn is an 18, 19-year-old cowboy living in South Dakota with his dad and sister. The sister has Asperger's. Dad's kind of a drunk. He's escaped from the hospital after being in a coma with a skull fracture. We get, like, him at rock bottom at the beginning of this movie, Mike.
Yeah, we see the grotesque injury that he suffered. Half his head is shaved, obviously. He's pulling staples out of his head with a plier in the mirror. My God, what an introduction.
In the first scene. So we eventually get to watch him watching his injury on the YouTube there. But he's kind of a locally famous Rodeo Cowboy.
He's got a little recognition to his name. People got this one scene where he's working in the supermarket and somebody comes up to take a picture with him.
But the overall plot of this is him trying to live with these new doctor's orders. Don't ride horses, don't rodeo anymore, and it's his whole life.
And the contradiction against how the cowboy way of life, the rub some dirt on it, muscle up, grit your teeth, you'll get back on there, don't give up, et cetera, again, this toxic masculinity thing that I'm going to kind of harp on.
And he's got a lot of negative reinforcement around this new lifestyle change. His father owes a lot of money, sells off his favorite horse to make a rent payment on the trailer. His dad seemingly cannot get past the I told you so's. You know, a lot of those scenes are very... they're good because the father's like, oh, give me a hug. Like when in that first scene, his introduction. And then he's like, well, I told you not to go that day. I had a bad feeling about it. Just, you know, covered in guilt about the whole life that he taught his son to take. And now his son always got his head bashed in.
Yeah.
That's probably why he's out drinking all day. I mean, I guess I relate to the father. I get that in that scene.
Did you get the feeling that the father had suffered some kind of thing too, where he chose to stop riding or something? And that's why he's drowning in sorrows.
Doesn't do much of the horse training either in this movie. Like, why doesn't the father just tame horses for the money?
I felt like he was almost a rodeo star himself and just decided not to do it, or had some kind of injury.
No,
it's not ever spelled out, but there's a line where Brady says, where I'm not going to be like you at the end.
You know, Brady will take a humiliating job at a supermarket to make some money. It's humiliating because he keeps bumping into people. Like, he's doing
his humiliating
job.
To the, again, the old cowboy stereotypical way. That's the only reason it's human. He's just trying to live and make do.
Right.
There's nothing shameful about doing what he's doing, except in his own mind.
But fans are coming up to him, like, oh, I hope to see on the rodeo again. And you should. And one guy's like flat out, like, you shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
You should be training horses.
You know what, guy? I'm making money.
I got to do what I got to do. Yeah. His rodeo buddies are also not encouraging. Like, they'll come by and basically wake him up from dead asleep. He's supposed to be resting.
Yeah.
And like, all right, well, let's go out.
Let's go get wasted.
We're going into the plains. They just make a bonfire, drinking. And that's my worst scene of the movie. I guess we'll get into it now. Them swapping injury stories is the most out of left field.
So hard to take. And this happens as somebody, I relate a lot to this because I have my own health problems as far as like living a quote unquote normal life.
And I get it. We've all done this though, like with friends, but.
Right. This guy has been through this such traumatic thing and he's trying to cope with who he is and trying to find his way in life. And I could see both sides of it because his friends can't possibly empathize with this.
Right.
All they can do is try to empathize, but in trying to empathize, they're really kind of belittling his injury.
Right.
Because the only war stories they're able to swap...
And that's why the scene works in the setup.
The only war stories they're able to swap are so minute compared to what Brady's going through. It's like, oh yeah, I broke my rib once. And Brady makes that point. He's like, well, a rib's a little different than a head.
And they're like, but no, you just got to cowboy up.
You got to be tough, right?
They all just stare at him because they're all non-actors. And but no, their worst acting is in that scene, in my opinion. And
it's tough to take.
And it's just so, it's like a sore thumb because it felt like one of those, it should have been shot like a Spike Lee interview, all the characters of the movie sequence.
Yeah.
You know? And it should have been with more style. Like, she was almost getting a little stylistic there, but she only went halfway. And it was a very awkward around the campfire.
You don't think that was intentional?
I think it was intentional. I didn't like it because it didn't work for me.
Okay.
It was just like, you have this plotting, beautiful movie, right? And then you have this kind of like harsh edit, harsh cut of all these guys telling these stories that are so planted.
Yeah,
right?
But see,
people don't talk to each other like this. If they don't say, when I was 19 years old and we were best friends, do you remember when I broke my arm? Of course you remember that. Hi, my name is Brady. This is like ridiculous.
I can see where people are trying to relate to a hardship you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it just falls flat. It's an awkward moment.
Right.
If she was trying to show that, that's how I interpreted it because I see it from a different angle. It's just, I get that. And I think that is an awkward moment. I think that was purposefully done. If it was purposely done for that purpose, then I think it achieved its goal. But
so
it's not an easy watch either way.
So you're saying, like, when I come over and complain about the fact I stubbed my toe and you're dealing with real shit, it bothers you?
It doesn't, no, that's not what I'm saying. It doesn't bother me, no. Just don't do it, is what I'm saying.
Don't do it. So, no, he's not getting any encouragement from his rodeo pals. He will go to the rodeo with his sister at one point, stay in, like, the bullpen area, and he just looks like he is being tortured by the fact that he can't ride.
Which is what I was very, very impressed with most, because, again, these scenes where he has to wear the resentment and wear the anger and wear the uncertainty on his face.
Do you think it's all real because he's a real former rodeo cowboy there?
I think it might. It has to be from somewhere real. Because if it's not, he's in the wrong profession and should just be an actor. Right?
The horse business kid, you're lowballing yourself. Go be a Hollywood star.
Right.
You're right, because he is just going off in that scene. Like, he's coaching him.
Yeah.
Like, it's just emotional where he's coaching him. He knows exactly what to say during that scene. He's a great coach in this movie,
number one.
Which I love.
Totally.
Another major storyline, I'm kind of bouncing around here in the plot, but a major storyline is him visiting his friend Lane Scott, who's a paraplegic at a rehab center, a hospital there, who can't speak, who can't really move or have any control of his body. He's partially paralyzed. He's got some control, minor motor functions, but he's all there mentally, it seems.
That's got to be horrific.
Just like my nightmare existence, and I can't get over how he is so positive,
happy,
and happy.
Yeah,
and
at least that's what he presents. Yeah,
I can't get over what a good actor he is.
Me either.
Are you kidding me?
It's amazing. It's
Are
absolutely
you kidding
amazing.
Me,
I'm
like
with you.
His choices on what to do. I can't get
over
some
of the stares.
The stares, yeah. And you could his face. He's got 10 different facial expressions. The guy can't fucking move his face.
I'm with you. It's
just
amazing.
The way he angles his head.
It's absolutely amazing. Absolutely 1,000% agree.
I'm getting so many different emotions from him, and this man can't move. This poor guy. So I love those scenes, and they're actually just touched my heart. They're actual childhood best friends. These two guys. The one other production nugget, though, to add, he did not get injured in a rodeo. In the movie, he got injured in a rodeo accident.
Oh, okay. So that wasn't part of it.
And yeah, they were showing a YouTube clip of him, like, doing all, like, a highlight film.
Right.
And that was awesome to see. That was the real Lane Scott. He got injured in a car accident.
Oh,
can
Jesus
you imagine
Christ.
That? Like, a guy who is
awful
riding bucking Broncos, just gripping death every single day. You actually get injured in a car accident?
Jesus.
Damn it. So that's unfortunate,
but
in the movie it works extremely well.
And he's a hell of an actor, like you said. Both those guys, for being traditionally not actors, amazing jobs.
As best scenes go in the movie, and there's three of them, I think, which is perfect. Act one, act two, act three, or three or four, but they're great. And the last two are particularly phenomenal and really give the movie a lot of substance, a lot, again, authenticity like crazy. Because here... He doesn't have to act, really. Unfortunately, you know, maybe that's why he's not getting the recognition he deserves, because he doesn't have to act necessarily in those scenes, because it is his real friend. He is trying to give his friend an imaginary horse ride on that chair with the reins. You know, I mean, he's really trying to do that and give his friend a fun time. So this plot really kicks into gear when Brady decides to work with horses again.
It takes a while for him to get to that point, but yeah.
He basically, the guy was bugging him at the bar. You know, I got these horses I want to tame. And he doesn't even do it. He doesn't even acknowledge
so
the guy.
So Brady's known in town not only as a rodeo hero, but also a legitimate horse trainer. That's how he makes his money.
Everybody's heard of his magic touch, right? So eventually he tames a horse for this guy. But later on in that tame, after he's successful with this new horse that we watch him train in long montage.
It's astounding.
It's a couple minutes, and it's a documentary, essentially, of him taming...
Literally training a wild animal.
Wild animal.
It's unbelievable. And it works in the structure of the story of this movie.
Awesome. So he does this, and the other guy is in there the whole time.
Yep.
Much of the time with him, and they're having a bit of a dialogue, and I wonder if she's planting, Chloe Zhao's ingeniously planting some lines for him to say. Oh, I heard you had this magic touch. I know that's what she's doing, and that's just brilliant to make it work and fit in seamlessly into that structure. And basically, Brady's hand will tighten up, I think, in the second time he's with this horse, and we learn a couple times that his hand has these involuntary things where it just.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a seizure,
it turns out he goes to a doctor and has it diagnosed that his brain is basically getting too much information from his body.
Right.
He's getting too much sensory overload. And when that happens, the brain is sending a signal to his hand to not be able to unclench his hand.
Right.
So anything in his hand at the time is going to stay clenched. Obviously, big problem for a rodeo, a bronco rider.
Yeah, it makes it impossible for him to really be successful working with these horses with that happening or get on a rodeo.
Doing a lot of things, but yeah.
So Brady is training the second horse, which it's a fascinating story, and I really loved it because it characterized the father so much. So Apollo is this horse that he finds in this guy's, you know, junkyard or in back of his trailer. Right?
Untrainable. Can't be trained.
This guy who's
somebody tried to train him and failed.
Failed. He's got all these bad habits now. So Brady does a deal with this guy. He's in the room when the father makes a deal with this guy. All right, I'll give you this horse for this windshield, $700 and weed, right?
How nice was that?
The barter system.
Why can't we have that today?
The barter system, still in effect, South Dakota. They make this deal, and the next day, Brady's like, all right, I got to save. He's counting his money. He's like, I got to save up enough money to buy this horse. But he doesn't have to buy it because his father buys it for him the next day. He's like, oh, by the way, go pick up Apollo. I bought him for you. So yeah, that was nice.
It was very nice. They're very humanizing. And it proved that, again, it's a layer. The father's a layered character. He'd been struggling with drinking and womanizing at the bars and gambling money away. And we have all these money problems. And Brady's kind of taking jabs at him, being like, maybe we wouldn't have money problems if you wouldn't spend them on poker every night or, you know. So it showed the complexity of there, as in every father-son relationship.
Right. But it's fun because we do get another sequence of Brady training Apollo. It doesn't take him as long because Apollo has already been broke before. But essentially, he takes Apollo out for his first ride with him and pukes and passes out because of this serious, you know, health issue.
I mean, you're really... your emotions are being toyed with in that moment because you have just seen Brady riding this wild animal across this gorgeous plain.
Landscape.
Yeah, with a sun in the background. I can't remember if it was rising or setting, but it's just like everything's so pretty. And then you're thinking this is the come up of the plot. Like
right. His
life is turning around here. He's finally going to be.
Just when he's at his best
and
again.
And it's so well written and so well done.
That's
and
genius.
Yes, he does throw up, falls off the horse, passes out basically in the field.
When you're at your highest point, knock them back to their lowest. When you're at your lowest, all of a sudden get your high. And it makes sense in the story because he was, you know, putting all these injuries on the back burner. So he's at the gross. The doctor basically tells him again, no
you're
riding.
Done. You're done as a rider.
If you want to live, you're done. These seizures will get worse. And he's back at the grocery store. He spends another day with his rodeo buddies, training the younger rodeo cowboy of the group, right, all day. He's like coaching him up. I love these scenes, too. Just the whole sequence of him coaching him up on the fake, you know, horse or whatever, the cantilever thing. And
so this is another thing he's able to do, even with his restrictions.
Still
he's
able to coach.
He's becoming a horse trainer. He's able to coach new rodeo riders. Give them the backstory. He's got options, but
that
he's just
night,
not fulfilled.
Yeah. That night, they're still kind of talking to him about, hey, you got to get back on a horse, right? They're still giving him that shit. But he's like, all right, kid, here are my rodeo.
Giving away his rodeo goods.
Rodeo gear.
He's giving away the shirt that both he wore and his buddy in the hospital wore when they were successful. Had their most successful, won their most money ever. You take this. Giving away the shoes or the saddle?
I don't know what you call them, but whatever the frills are on their pants.
The stirrups, yeah, the stirrups. Chaps, yeah. Chaps. They give it, you know, these are one of my favorite ones. Take these, take them away. And then as he's doing that.
As this kid's trying him on, right?
Yeah. His face just gets so angry and resentful and like, why does he get to live my dream?
And then he's like, hey, can you still wrestle?
I have to assert dominance. I have to let this kid know I'm better than him in so many other ways.
And they get his blood boiling because they're like, nah, because you can't wrestle with your head. You know, nah.
Sure, that's safe for you to do. Yeah.
You go easy on his head. And he's just like getting the eye of the tiger there. You know, gets this kid down on the ground. At first, it's all funny. And Miss Starry Magoo over there, the bad actor, is like just staring at him and laughing and whatever.
But gotta cancel that kid, I think.
But then they have like this scene where he's like got the kid in a submission hold, got him pinned. The kid's tapping out, but he won't tap
holds out. Holds on a couple seconds too long.
Yeah, and then the kid freaks out, of course. So that's it's a crazy scene, it's a crazy sequence, the whole thing. He's often pointing a gun, Brady is, at the mirror. Like we see him go outside.
So well done.
We think like, is this going to go taxi driver on us? It's crazy. Like, it's an homage to Taxi Driver out of nowhere. He's pointing a gun at the mirror.
Is he going
to
lose grip on his life being so unfulfilled? Is he going to let the idea of being a rodeo rider define him so much that he's going to hurt himself or others if he can't do it? And those seeds are just planted. Yeah,
just planted, and he could go in that direction. Instead, he just goes out back and shoots a couple of cronies just being and a rabbits.
Cowboy.
And,
just being a cowboy.
I guess, yeah. I mean, he's just living off the land. He's making some rabbits for dinner. So this is when that next scene comes with Lane Scott. He simulates Lane riding a horse in their imaginations, and he's talking them through it as they have Lane set up on a chair, and he's got Lane bouncing a little bit with the actual reins as a kind of a prop in the scene at Lane's rehab, and he's starting to coach him up again, Brady. He's starting to coach him up again, and Lane can't really do it, and he doesn't want to do it. He kind of realizes that, oh, this is really fake, and he puts his head down. It just moved me so much, because then it's Brady trying to cheer up his buddy, and he's using the same sayings. He's like, nah, get up, buddy, or whatever he said.
He realizes.
You love that. And then on the ride home, Brady just breaks down. And well,
he realizes how much bullshit there is in that just walk it off mentality.
And you think, is he crying for himself? Is he crying for Lane? Is he crying for both? It's like the whole world's crashing down. And if you think that was bad, but just wait, Apollo gets caught in barbed wire.
So the Apollo scene basically pretty much immediately follows Brady breaking down after being with Lane. Apollo, he wakes up the next morning. He sees Apollo's escaped. So we've already just had, just fresh on the heels of this cowboy mentality is bullshit. You can't sometimes just walk it off, just get back on the horse figuratively, just deal with it. And now we're going to have the, I'm not a horse. It's not like, just because I'm broken doesn't mean I'm useless.
Right.
He finds Apollo, who has escaped his pen, and messed up his leg. Totally shattered his leg, essentially, breaking out of the barbed wire. We see, well done too, very well shot. We see the pieces of blood and the hair caught in the barbed wire. He's able to track down Apollo, and Apollo's standing in the field, broken.
I couldn't tell, like, the special effect. They, like, it seems to me like they wrapped something around the horse's leg, you know.
It was like, I hope so.
Or they killed, or they, or Apollo's dead.
I didn't think about that. Jesus Christ. Yeah, Chloe Zhao, great director, does not like horses. No,
horses will go down.
Let's hope that's not the case. But yes, but they did, whatever the case was, it did look like Apollo had a bad leg. Brady can't bring himself to kill this horse. Because if I need to put this horse down, what does that say about me? How useless am I? So
he's feeling sorry for himself again.
He needs his father to put the horse down, and it's also a moment of, the world means nothing. He thinks at this point he is Apollo.
Right, and he tells his sister about it a few scenes later. He's like, you know how, he's basically telling his sister that they had to put Apollo down, and she's like, no. And then he's like, well, you know, I got injured like Apollo, but I'm a person, so I can't be, I have to live.
That's what this whole movie hinges on, is his interpretation of events.
Right.
And right now he's saying, yeah, I'm no different. I'm an injured horse. I'm no different than an injured horse. I'm an injured rodeo rider. Super, I can't ride.
Feeling super sorry for himself. A few scenes before that or after that, I don't remember. He tries to pawn his saddle, gets in there. The guy at the pawn shop is like, a lot of rodeo cowboys come in here. You can't rodeo forever. And he's like, no, I changed my mind. I'm going to keep my saddle.
So after all this, he's saying, fuck it. I'm riding. I'm a fucking cowboy. I'm
going to
ride.
I'm going to the rodeo. The next morning, he wakes up. He meets his father. And his father's, you could see, like, visibly, he is so rattled.
They can't express emotion. They don't know how to do it.
He doesn't know what to say to his son. All he can muster is just like, fine, go kill yourself then. You're just going to go kill yourself.
It makes sense, because you get to that point where it's like, you can't control your adult son anymore, right? Like, you can't pin him down and have him do what's good for himself.
You're stubborn like your mother was, and I just can't, nothing I say is going to mean any difference to you. And then the son's like giving him shit back. He's like,
I'm not going to be like
about,
you.
What about everything you told me my whole life, by cowboying up, about all this, grit your teeth, all that stuff.
And that's when the father realizes it's all bullshit. That masculinity shit doesn't ride.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So Brady gets to the rodeo. He's high-fiving everybody. Everybody's glad he's back. He's practicing like his drills. I don't remember if his hand acts up then or does it. But
I don't remember.
Whatever.
Either.
They kind of fixate on his hand on the rope for a little while. He's doing his drills in there. He's waiting his turn. And then he sees his father and his sister show up across the way. His father nods to him, looking just distraught.
Yep. Totally beaten.
But nods to him, and he nods back. And then we see like a long shot of the horse freaking out in its pen, oh, by the way, Brady, you're up. And he's watching this horse freak out. He's looking back at it. It's just good cinematography. Yeah, it's good cinema right now.
Good storytelling.
And he basically goes up to Starry Magoo and he tells him, good luck, man. And yeah. Basically, he's like, I'm out.
He walks over towards his family.
And he hugs his family.
And it's, again, that matter of interpretation. No, you're not a horse. You can still have a fulfilling life even if you cannot do what you love.
Well, it's like there's no answers in the rest of his life given to him. That's the courageous part. It's not like, all right, I found my wife and kids. Well, or I found my new employment. Or I found anything else that works in his
life. And I think that's why that last scene is tacked on. Because there's no answers. Because he goes back to Lane at the end of the movie. The very last scene is him working with Lane again. And Lane tells him, signs to him, don't give up on your dreams. And I think my interpretation of that was Lane's dream is to beat this fucking thing, get out of the hospital and ride again. Brady has a new dream now because he hasn't had answers. It's to get answers and how to live a fulfilling life without being a cowboy.
And I think tacked onto that. It's just like, all right, I'm living for my sister. I'm living for my dad. I'm living for my friend. I may not be able to live for these horses anymore. I may have to change my identity, but damn it. These people
matter. What I do doesn't define me. I'm a person. I'm a human being.
These people matter.
And not a goddamn horse that has a bad leg and needs to be put down. Exactly. Deserves to be put down, yeah.
Exactly.
The lot of emotional cachet in this movie, at least for me personally, I was able to relate to it on kind of a deeper level like that. It was fucking emotional. I mean, if you go through any kind of tragedy and you've had to readjust your purview of life, a lot of people have. I'm one of those people at some point.
Yeah,
it's a heavy fucking watch.
Now, you've lived closer to it with a health issue, but I think this metaphor works for a lot of lifestyle changes.
Absolutely.
I don't want to diminish that. But
No, you're
definitely
you're
similar experiences from athletes transitioning to everybody not being an athlete after high school anymore, per se. Like I was, or go to college. You're not an athlete anymore. Who the hell are you?
It's totally relatable. And it was done, it's done in such an unrelatable way. Like, who among us can ever think that our life story could be so told through the eyes of a rodeo cowboy?
Exactly. A coming of age story or a becoming an adult story from a rodeo cowboy who's nothing in common with you and me. Nothing.
It's a genius.
He goes out back into his backyard, shoots a couple of rabbits, and makes them for dinner.
Yeah. Now listen, we can talk about grades.
Yeah.
I can't let the fact that it's so heartwarming and so relatable
sway you again.
No, it will. It needs to lose points just like any other awards movie would.
No, you got to do your job.
Right. It needs to lose points the same as any awards movie would. And if you're going to rely on non-actors, when they are so bad in scenes, it needs to take away from the movie. So I'm an 85B. I'm a hard B on it. It's a great story. It's a relatable story. It's very ingenuitive. And I think that Chloe Zhao is awesome.
She's a rock star.
Total talent. As far as what you see on screen, the story far outweighs some of the talent. I think the Brady character should be a full-time actor. Mm-hmm. I think he's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. The father may want to be a full-time actor. Some of the ancillary characters, I think, hurt the overall story with their performances. But it's a B. It's a B all day to me.
So, yeah, I mean, we've kind of had a curve. You're a little harsher, greater. So this seems to me it fits in my B pluses. And I think it's an 88, 89. I've written down 89 back when.
It's an 88 for me, but it's a horse movie, so it's an automatic minus three.
Automatic minus four.
Yeah.
No, I think it's there. So if you're paying attention, we'll get this all up on our website at some point. But if you're paying attention, it's kind of above average in terms of Oscar movies for me. Like this could totally, would I be upset if this movie's a Best Picture nominee? No, I would not. Like if
I wouldn't grades, be upset, no.
It grades wise, it fits for me. And
and it doesn't for me. It wouldn't be a top 10 movie right now. But I'll be happy if I see it get in the Best Picture.
Right, it's not a top 10 movie for me either, but it's top 20. I'll tell you that much.
Makes sense. There you go. I look, we want to hear what you guys think. And again, does this movie relate to anything you've been through in life? And if you would, we'd love to hear those experiences because we take this from two very different angles. We both found similar meaning in it, which I think is
wild.
A very special type of story to tell to have that happen. So we want to hear if it does the same for you. If you had what your grades were personally and anything that you felt about the writer, do you expect to see it finish in that top 10 for Best Picture come time for the Academy Awards? Reach out to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, MikeMikeAndOscar.com@gmail.com, and on Reddit. We're available. Tune in SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, et cetera, pretty much everywhere that you hear podcasts. And on this day where we're talking about the Old West, Mike's going to tell you how to shoot a six shooter.
or give some words of wisdom.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
All right, so essentially, I just wanted to say, for the record, you know, not all horse movies are bad movies, Mike. You get a good horse movie with this one.
I'm changing my grade to a C minus. No, yes, this wasn't a very good horse movie.
It was a very good movie.
It's a very good movie. It's a very good movie, brought down by the fact that, I kid, of course. And those horses were absolutely gorgeous.
Now you got
absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, and we'll check you next time.
See ya.